get ready for an incredible episode of the Good Glow podcast with Olivia Hunt. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you by Dove's Advanced Care Body Wash. If you're looking for that extra special step in your self-care routine that goes a very long way, well, this is it. Dove's Advanced Care Body Wash is powered by 24-hour renewing micro moisture technology, which means it doesn't just clean your skin, it actually nourishes it too. Millions of tiny moisturizing droplets get to work as soon as you step into the shower, and even better, keep working hours after you step out. So if you're ready to treat your skin to something truly nourishing, Dove Advanced Care Body Wash is available nationwide. Trust me, your skin will thank you. I'm truly honoured to bring this podcast to you today. Olivia Hunt is a true soul sister. She is so wise and has so much to offer the world. 2 years ago, Olivia was queuing for a coffee at her local coffee shop when a car came out of nowhere. It had mounted the pavement and crashed into her from the side. What happened next is unbelievable. Olivia today talks to us about those moments where she had to dig deep to survive. She talks to us about her utter transformation. And this podcast will truly change your life like it's changed mine. I was hanging on Olivia's every word. And what she says right at the end will stay with me for a very long time. I hope you enjoy this podcast. I guess I've waited a long time to say this, but Olivia, welcome to the Good Glow.
What an absolute honour, Georgie. Thank you so much for asking me on. It's a dream come true to be on the Good Glow, my absolute favourite podcast.
Well, you have one of my favourite podcasts, and I've been lucky enough to be on your podcast, Jamie. The best interview I've ever heard Jamie do was with you.
Oh, it was number one.
Everyone loved that podcast. So I'd encourage everyone to go and listen to your podcast on healing, and I'll leave a link in the show notes so that people can discover more about your world, Olivia. You are one of our greatest friends and confidence and supporters, soul sister. I could go on and on and on. But you've been on such an incredible journey over the last few years. And I know that it's so difficult for you to talk about. Why does now feel like a good time maybe for the Good Glow?
I think that I am feeling more grounded in myself now than I ever have. And that is where my life has taken me. You are, you know, well aware of my story. There has been a lot of trauma in my life in recent years and from an early age. And one thing I've learned about life is that it is very delicate. And I had that knowing, say, at 14 when my beautiful brother Derek died by suicide. And after he passed away, shortly after that, my cousin, Eugene Tahini was his name, he had a cardiac arrest at 29. He was from New York. And shortly after that, our other first cousin, Michael Desmond, died in 9/11. And I know you had his brother Billy on the podcast. So that was three first cousins, all passed away really, really young. And I just remember my teens been really difficult. There was a lot of like good times as well, but there was a lot of trauma. And I myself started dealing with that when I was, say, in my 20s. And, you know, I had started getting therapy for grief. I had really started investing in my well-being. And that's when, I'd say, spirituality really entered my life. And, say, Eugene and myself as well, you know, during COVID, we were supposed to get married, and like so many couples, we tried twice and then it wasn't happening. So we went to ourselves and we had the most beautiful day, just the two of us in Dublin, and we got legally married. And we always said, you know, well, like we'll do that, then we'll have our celebration. And we're nearly 5 years down the line now, and that opportunity hasn't come. But I know it will in time and when the time is right. But say, we got legally married in December 2020. And shortly afterwards, our little boy, James, came along. And James, I feel, Georgie, like James took both of our hands and he brought us on a really, really special journey. James was born with a heart condition that was only diagnosed when he was 2 days old. So, you know, Eugene and me have experienced so much together. And that moment, it felt like when we were told that, when he was 2 days old, we were told his life was at risk. And it was like a moment where the ground just goes from beneath you and things could go either way. And I feel like, you know, James really opened our hearts and our eyes to what people go through. You know, I was in Crumlin with James at a checkup last week, and every time I go in that door, I am so grateful that James is as good as he is. And I'm so grateful when we can both leave together. And I look back at myself, Georgie, and I see how strong I have become on his journey. He's 4 now. There was times when I used to cry in that car park in Crumlin after being told news that actually never like came true. But I just have seen my strength, and I have also known that Derek has been with me every step of that journey. My brother, and I say that to everyone, like, they are always, always with us.
I was reading in Miriam's book about the soul and how your soul is always in existence, whether you are here physically or not. And that was so reassuring, because I think when we look at people passing away, we think it's the end. But actually, if we are open to it, they can live and be a part of our everyday life just as before, but in a different way.
Yeah. I always say, like, the connection continues, the love continues. Your love for the person and their love for you, it continues. It is just in a different way. And it takes time to connect to, like, and to communicate in a way that feels right for you. It will be different to, like, for everybody. But, you know, with all of the stuff that's happened, I feel like all that trauma, you know, it was my son's life, it was my brother, it was my cousin's. But little did I know then I was about to face, you know, a trauma where my life and my survival was on the line. And what I will say is that every single thing that happened to me in my life before that, it prepared me for it. And it got me through the hardest months of my whole life. And we talk about the soul, that connection to the divine is stronger in me than it has ever been in my whole life. I know that we are divinely guided. And if we can tune into that, Georgie, like through presence, you know, through doing whatever brings us into the present moment, we will feel that in our hearts.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And Olivia, we got to know each other because you came to run the New York Half Marathon with us in 2023. And you were such a huge part of that group, someone who came by themselves to New York, and we sat in the reception of the Westin Grand Central, do you remember? And we sat there and we shared our stories, and I just felt very it's big sister energy. Like, I feel like you are like a big sister to me. I don't even know if you're older than me. I don't think you are.
I think I'm older.
You're a little bit, nearly the same age. But I feel, do you know what I mean when I say that? Yeah. Like, when you're around, I feel safe. And I feel like someone has my back. I've never had a sister. I have amazing sisters-in-law. I think that's how you say it. Sometimes I say sister-in-laws, but it's sisters-in-law. But I feel when you're around, I feel like it's family vibes. And
thank you, Georgie.
You had signed up then to come the next year with your husband, Eugene, who we adore and has since come on Go Glow Trip without you. The absolute
He's like, I'm always messing with him. I'm like, you are the good glow brand ambassador, and that is it.
I know. So he's such a big part of the crew. So you had signed up for the next year, and I was sitting on a bed in Mallorca, And Jamie came into the room. I'll never forget where I was. And he said, Olivia sent a message and you need to read it. And don't worry, she's okay. And you had put in a message that you had been in an accident. If you feel okay to go back to what had happened that morning, where you were on your way to, just bring us back to the morning of your accident, if you feel okay to do that.
So it was a Friday morning in June 23, and I remember this morning so well. I did a really lovely morning with James, my little man. I had got him ready for it to bring him into creche. And I remembered the drive in the car. I remember leaving him into creche and turning around and saying, James, smile, and took a picture of him. I took a few actually, and I had given him the biggest hug that morning. And that would mean, you know, as I tell the story, made the world a difference for what was about to happen to me later that morning. So after I left him off, I came back to Dunmore East where I live, and I went for a sea swim, something I love to do to this day. And Georgie, it was weird when I look back, because I remember something in me saying, like, do another lap the sea. And I just said, no, I better get ready, like, I've stuff to do. And then I went back up to my house. I remember so clearly putting on one of my favourite dresses, my red, or it was a pink denim dress. And I said, right, I'll go down and get a coffee, like I always used to do, and a treat on a Friday. And then it was like another thing inside. Maybe you should leave your coffee today. And I couldn't figure out, was that my intuition, or was it, you know, I was trying to cut down a bit on my coffee. Anyway, I drove down to the coffee shop, which is just a little bit down from where I live. And I parked somewhere that I never park. And I went, say, got out of my car and I went into the coffee shop. And I ordered, like my usual, a skinny cappuccino. And I said, I get my treat, a cinnamon bun that day. And then I stood outside the coffee shop in front of the coffee hatch and beside my car. And within a few seconds, I just got this wave over me, a feeling like Derek was with me. And the reason is probably because of what was about to happen, but also I was actually due to record a podcast about Derek straight after I got my coffee that morning. So within a few seconds, all I remember in that moment was this, what sounded like this loud explosion. And I had absolutely no idea what had happened. I remember being hit from the side and pressed up against my own car. And then the next thing I remember was opening my eyes and I was on the pavement and I was covered in rubble. And in them moments, I will never forget them moments. I will never forget them. Ever. And I vividly remember what was going through my mind. And the first thing that went through my mind was James. His face just flashed through my mind. And then I had this ache in my heart because I said, oh my God, that was my last morning with my son and I didn't even know it. But I was so glad I had given him such a big hug when I dropped him off. Like, that meant the world to me in that moment that I had done that. And then Eugene, my mother's face flashed in to my head. And Georgie, it was just like my heart broke in a million pieces in that moment. And this happened in seconds. This happened in seconds. But it was like time slowed down in them seconds. Then the next thing I thought was, oh my God, this is how quickly it happens. This is how quickly our lives can end.
Could you hear anything or feel anything, any pain?
So at that moment, it was just complete and utter survival mode. I felt completely numb from my waist down. And I could not breathe. I remember that so well. I couldn't breathe. There was something inside of me, Georgie, saying, breathe, Olivia, breathe, Olivia, breathe, Olivia. I remember that so well. And I believe it was my higher self, or I really do. And, you know, like, I'm so big into being present and mindfulness, but I was like, I really struggled. I couldn't breathe. The wind had just been knocked out of me. And then, like, I have this memory of looking down at my legs in complete and utter disbelief. I was like, oh my God. And I thought, like, this is how quickly your life can change, because I thought in that moment, I thought I was paralyzed. I was looking at my legs in complete shock. I just couldn't believe it. And the third thing then that went through my mind is like, I'm not ready to die. I am not ready to die. That kept, I was like, I'm not ready to die. And then I have a memory of trying to scream for help, but nothing had come out of my mouth.
Oh my God, Olivia. That is like a real life nightmare.
It was like waking up in the middle of a nightmare. That is exactly what it was like. But it was also like I was being held as well through it. So the first hero, as I call him. So as I queued that morning for my coffee, there was a guy standing in front of me. And he was the first person to run to my aid. And I just remember him so well. I remember he was like sweating, and it, like, I couldn't even talk. I couldn't move. I was just like in such a state of shock and completely disorientated. And so then, like, I noticed that there was a load of people around, and like there was cars, and I was told afterwards by one of the paramedics in Waterford, Clive, that 10 calls came in seconds to 999. And this is where, you know, when like you might come on an accident or something and you're like, oh, will I ring? I always say call straight away, because the sooner you call, the sooner the person will be helped. So this guy, Charlie, was the first person to help me, and I will never forget what he did for me that morning. Like, he was just coming, getting his coffee, and then he was thrown into this chaos. So the next person then, all these calls to 999. So then immediately the National Ambulance Service are notified, and also Critical Charity are tasked by the National Ambulance Services to provide pre-hospital care to people that are in accidents. So my emergency medical responder, his name is Dr. Paul Campbell. I had met him 2 weeks before my accident. I was introduced to him. Isn't that unbelievable? So Paul told me that he lives like 100 metres from the coffee shop, and his wife said that Paul had been outside. He had been putting stuff in his car, his medical bag in his car. He was about to go to Mayo to a match with his children. And his wife came out and she said he was just gone. But she's used to him having to go last minute, so she thought something must be up. So Paul seen where this was and he just ran down straight away. And that's, Georgie, I believe, like, you know that song Amazing Grace? I feel like that was a real moment of grace for me and of divine protection. I seen then Paul in the distance, and every part of my body just relaxed. Something happened when I seen him, because I knew he was a doctor. He's like a brother-in-law. Our neighbours live right behind us, so he's their brother-in-law. So we'd heard loads of stories about Paul. He's like the local hero in Dunmore East. So it made the world of difference, him being there. He was the first person there.
Was the car, Olivia, I don't know if this is a strange question, but did you realise that you had been knocked over at that point?
So at that point, I had some idea that that's what had happened, but I wasn't sure. I didn't see any car coming, Georgie, because it hit me from the side. So I really did not know what had happened as it was going on. I knew something, I was in the middle of something awful, and I knew that my life was at risk. And I actually thought I was in the middle of being killed that morning. I can't, like, when I think back to it, all I remember is being, so what happened, what actually happened was, as I stood waiting for my coffee, there was an oncoming driver. And all I have been told is that they lost control of the car and their foot slipped onto the accelerator. And they first crashed into the corner of the coffee shop and then into me. So when Paul came, I was stuck on a part of the building and I couldn't move. So he came over to me. The first thing he did was syringed morphine into my nose and a lot of other stuff. So that's why these critical responders are so important. They have morphine, they have life-saving equipment. And then, Georgie, the next thing, and I always, when I think about critical, when I think about the paramedics, when I think about the firemen, two words come to my mind: dignity and respect. They treated me with such care, such care. So Paul straight away put a pelvic belt around my pelvis to hold my pelvis together. My pelvis was broke in multiple places and my lumbar spine was broken multiple places as well. So he then, and this is why I always remember Paul, he started straight away doing checks on my legs, up and down my legs. And I will never forget the moment I felt my legs. I felt my legs and I just, my heart, I cannot tell you what I felt in that moment. I said to myself, I will get through anything now. I will get through anything and I will make sure, I will make sure that from this moment on, I am going to make the most of my life. It was just such a defining moment for me when I could feel them.
Did you feel very alone in that moment, or did you feel, obviously, Dr. Paul, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, Dr. Paul was there, but yeah. Did you feel, it's probably an impossible question to ask, but did you feel, because obviously Eugene wasn't there, your parents live far away.
Yeah. We had only moved to Dunmore East. We were there a year and a half at that point. And Eugene had just arrived to Limerick in work that morning when he got a call. So I felt protected in that moment. And I feel that it was, I feel like my brother was with me. I feel my cousins were with me, as well as, say, Charlie, the first guy that was on the scene, Paul. And then there was loads of firemen there. And I only remember one, Robbie O'Brien, who I've become friendly with here in Dunmore East. And I always remember Robbie. He brought a lot of calm as well to the chaos, because you can imagine coming on this scene, the work these people have to do. But Robbie, I remember putting my hand on his arm and he said, "Don't worry, we're going to get out of here." And I felt in that moment, I just couldn't understand how I get from where I was to into an ambulance. But somehow, Georgie, they just did it. Like, they just, I don't know how they did it. Well, obviously, like, they're so skilled and talented. But it just, like, before I knew it, I was then, like, up on a stretcher and being put into an ambulance.
Oh my God, this is just, I can't even imagine.
I've actually never been lost for words in terms of speaking to somebody on a podcast, because I feel like it's just so traumatic. It's just the way you describe it, I feel like I'm there with you. So who do you know who called Eugene, and what sort of phone call he got?
Yes. So Charlie, my phone had been like flung somewhere and it was still working. And I have this memory of Charlie putting the phone to my face and doing facial recognition. And then, say, he seen Eugene's name on the last dialed and he called him. So that was like, you know, while it was all happening. And then this part breaks my heart, because my parents have been through so much in their lives.
Yeah.
But when I was in the ambulance, Clive, one of the paramedics, he called my mother, and my two younger brothers, Gary and Nathan, like, I just feel my family have had so many of these moments in our home in Roscommon. And I remember even being in different rooms when I find out about different tragedies, like my cousin. And Gary and Nathan just said they remember my mother coming into the kitchen and she was as white as a sheet, like. And they said they knew something really awful had happened. And even my brothers, like, say, my dad and my brothers are agri contractors. So, you know, machinery safety would have always been very, like, front of mind. And, yeah, like, they just couldn't believe what had happened to me. And I feel so sorry for them, because I knew how worried they were about me. And the first thing, Clive rang my mother, and the first thing I said to my mother is, "Mammy, I'm okay. I'm okay, Mammy." Because I just wanted her to know. And I didn't even know at that stage if I was okay, in terms of, I just knew that I wasn't paralyzed. And I knew I had a lot of serious injuries. But that it was really important for me in that moment to tell Mammy that I was okay.
And that's you, Olivia, like, always looking out for other people and always minding other people. And I can't imagine how reassuring it was for your mum to hear your voice, you know, just in that moment. It's every mother's worst nightmare to get a phone call like that. But to hear your child in that moment must be the greatest gift you will ever be given. Tell me about the last text that you had sent to your mum the night before.
Yes. So if there's one thing, you know, since that I've learned, even since all of this, it is that the universe speaks to us through synchronicities or meaningful coincidences. And I always remember one of my guests, Brendan Ring, describing a coincidence as a series of events in life in which God wishes to remain anonymous. I cannot tell you all of the things that happened to me in the weeks leading up to my accident. This is one that it is just to this day blows my mind, and it's really special. So the week before my accident, I had decided that now was the time for me to record an episode about Derek on my podcast, to talk a bit about him, who he was as a person. Like, he was like a real, he loved to have fun. I would say in his 16 years, he made the most of it. He really did live life to the full. And he was an absolute, like, me and him would have got in a lot of trouble together. We were always, like, up to mischief. And I had, say, worked in a suicide prevention charity for years, so I would have talked a lot about the suicide part of his life. But that was just one part of Derek's life. You know, he had a very full life before that happened. But anyway, I think even the fact that that thought dropped into my consciousness to record a podcast about Derek the week before, I know Derek was speaking to me. He knew that he'd know me well. He knew that I would pick up after all of this happened, that he was beginning to surround me with love and peace in the week leading up to my accident. So I decided I'll do a podcast. Then on the Wednesday, Eugene was working in Donegal at the time. And I went into my room. I had put James to bed. James had just turned two. And I sat down and I started writing a bit about Derek. And that night, I got a bit scared, to be honest. I felt like I could feel Derek in the room with me. That's the Wednesday. So I feel I'm very connected in that way. And so I got a bit scared and I said, okay, I'm going to just go to bed beside James. And I always laugh because what's James going to do? If someone appears to me, I always feel like I'll be really scared. But anyway, I always feel a bit safer when I'm beside someone. And anyway, the next day, then it was Thursday. So for my podcast, I wanted this one to be really special. And I asked my mother what her favourite memory of Derek was. And I asked my dad what was his favourite memory of Derek. And they broke, like, the both of their memories. They just, like, you can imagine me now, I was bawling crying because they were so beautiful and they were just really happy memories of him. And I text my mother that after she had sent them to me and I said, it's good to remember the good times. That was my last text to my mother the night before it happened. I looked at that message and it sent a shiver down my spine when I was in hospital. And even Georgie, like a few weeks before it, I was in and out of hospital in Waterford. Eugene's mother had had a hip replacement. She's in her 80s. I was in and out. It's like, again, I was being prepared to spend weeks in hospital. You know, and this is no joke, okay? I was in the bed my mother-in-law was in hospital. Isn't that insane?
Oh my God.
And that's the quote that you always say is, we don't know what we're training for.
So it was actually Dan Glenn. He's a friend of Jerry's. That was his first text to me when he heard what had happened. He said, we never know what we're training for in life. I believe the New York half marathon. I was trying to get my pink back during that trip, like after, you know, becoming a mother for the first time, you know, it's all about giving. But that trip for me was about giving back. But I cannot tell you what that trip did then for me, like in my recovery afterwards. So, yeah. It was just unbelievable, Georgie. Like, I feel, and all of my consultants said that, like, you're so lucky, you are so fit, that it would be so much more difficult for me if I hadn't been fit.
Wow.
And it was so special, you know, like, it just even, I think, you know, my ASICS runners that I ran the half marathon in, when I had started physio, which took a while, obviously, like, but the first day I started physio, they asked Eugene to bring in my runners and I said, bring in my green ASICS. And it was like there was this energy vibrating from my runners, because all I seen when I seen my runners was me running across Manhattan Bridge on top of the world. And I connected to that energy in hospital, Georgie. And I really believe that it pulled me through a lot of them. Like, you can imagine trying to stand up with a broken lumbar spine and pelvis, connecting to that energy and also thinking about the trip that I had signed up for the next March, which I went in on but couldn't, like, run. That is where my point of focus was. I never doubted at all that I just knew I would run again.
And so let's go back to the day and the ambulance and what happened when you got to the hospital and who was
your first loved one, who was there first?
So because Eugene was in Limerick and my family all live 3.5 hours away, Eugene was the first person in, but Clive, the paramedic, came and stood beside me as I waited, and the guards and Dunmore East as well had come in. And it was them that had explained to me what had happened, because at that point I still had no idea. And it was so weird because one of the guards had been in our house signing a passport for James, and he had young kids himself. And I could see in his eyes the disbelief what had happened. You know, and it's like, I was looking at them, then I was looking at my legs, and I was like, this is so fucking weird. And even like, when I was brought into the emergency room, it was packed, and that scared me as well. It was full of doctors and nurses. And I was really, really scared then. I did feel protected too, but I also felt scared. And I caught a glimpse of a hospital bag with my belongings in it, including my pink dress. And that scared me because I remember the bag we were given with Derek's stuff in it after he had died. So that really scared me. It was a real moment of like, my God, I'm alive. I'm so lucky to be alive.
And also in that moment, you must feel so vulnerable to see what you were wearing that morning in a bag.
It's really hard to describe. Like, my shoes, like, it just felt really, really strange. It was an eerie feeling. That's how I describe it. A really eerie feeling. So then Eugene was making his, like, poor Eugene, he had just landed to work. And the drive to Limerick from here is a horrible road. And then he had to make his way back, and he didn't really know, like, he was hearing different things and, you know, he was really worried, obviously. But in, say, that, like, space while he was arriving, I was then being, like, rushed around in a trolley getting, like, CT scans, x-rays, loads of tests. And it was, when I say, like, I was full of morphine, all sorts of stuff. And I am telling you, the pain when I was lifted onto a bed to get my x-ray or CT scan, it was excruciatingly painful. I never, ever experienced physical pain like that. So then they had done all the tests, and I had had a lot of internal bleeding afterwards. So, you know, I was being prepared. Like, I really did not know. I knew I was in a lot of pain, but I really was holding on to hope. Even in them moments, I swear to God, the second this happened, I was just imagining and saying to myself that all is well. So Eugene then arrived in, and, you know, I feel upset because I remember the last time I had seen his face the way it was when he walked in. And it was when we were told that James' life was at risk. He just looked so shocked, and he couldn't believe what was after happening. And so he was by my side then, but James was in creche, you know. So this had happened at 9:30. Eugene got there, I'm not even sure what time it was, but James then had to be collected from creche. And, you know, our neighbours are so good. Like, and, you know, I wasn't able to ring anyone or in this, like, interim period. So, but Dr. Paul had, you know, said to our neighbours, and, like, our neighbours, Tom and Shona, are really good people. And Tom had got on to Eugene and said, look, like, I'll collect James, like, just this. And this, Georgie, this is where the human spirit in the community comes to life, you know. And that's another thing, you know, I feel I did, you know, another way Derek's death had prepared me. I knew that feeling. I knew how good people were, and I could connect to that energy again, because the love that, like, from that moment, it was just like so much love flowing my way.
And also to the awareness to let it in, because you had seen the impact that it had before. So you just let that flow straight away into your healing.
Yes. So he was the first person. And then like my then my family, you know, had started to come. And, you know, I always think of golden friends. You know, on Marianne Williamson podcast, and she said, your dreams are held in trust for you. I believe people are too, and friends are held in trust for you, and boyfriends. You know, like, I really feel that. But one of my best friends, Elaine, like, was down, like, and she spent the whole day with me, I remember, on the Sunday. And was it that Sunday? Or it was a few days afterwards anyway. And like, you know, I feel like I was meant to connect with certain people here in Dunmore East. I have another really good friend, Kelly. You know, Valerie. Oh my God, like the love that came from them. They were like my family as well here.
And obviously then your test results started coming back.
Yeah.
You were now faced with the reality of what happened.
Yes.
So what did the next couple of weeks look like, and months and years afterwards? Yeah.
I was told that I might have to go straight to Dublin for surgery on my pelvis that night. It was like, I was been told like lots of different things. And then they decided to admit me that night. And I then eventually what they decided to do was they wanted me to lie straight in the bed and to see if the fractures would all stabilize. So that's what they decided to do. And it was really hard because, like, James obviously wasn't allowed in to see me. So I found that really difficult. But in terms of recovery, after about a week, they said that they were going to try and get me to first sit up. And, you know, a few days later, sit up first, and then I had to get x-rays again. And then a few days later, I had to try to stand up. So it was very slow. Like, I was looked after really well in there. But like, that was a real strange moment for me, Georgie, like just lying on the bed, not able to do anything for myself. And that's actually when it was a few days into that on my phone, Spotify, my running playlist from the New York Half Marathon popped up. And I can't tell you even what the energy of listening to that music did. And something in me then said, let Team Go Glow know. And I always feel bad because, like, obviously I wasn't really aware of what day it even was. I messaged everyone on a Monday morning at like 8 o'clock when people were on their way to work about this big life altering experience that was after happening. But then, like, I'll never forget that message after message. You rang me straight away. That meant the world to me. You know, it really, really did. Like, I really appreciate what you and Jamie did. That gave me a real boost, you know, all the love from Team Go Glow. So afterwards, you know, I remember the first day I stood up, and when the physios were coming in, the first thing I asked them was like, because I knew I had signed up and that's all I was focused on for the half marathon the next March. So I asked them, that was my first question, do you think I'll be able to run the New York Half Marathon in March? And I always remember they said, well, let's focus on getting you to sit up first. And they weren't being any way, like, but they were being practical, of course, you know. Say that I just think from listening to that music, everything, it had just lit that fire in me.
Something coming to me there was like, you could have just said back to them, well, actually, I'm in the business of miracles, so you got to get on the same page as me here. This is happening.
I absolutely love that.
A short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. This week, I've been using the anti-stress body wash infused with chamomile and oat milk. It's designed to calm your senses while delivering millions of micro moisture droplets that deeply hydrate and protect your skin. It's also free from sulfates, made with biodegradable ingredients, and packaged in 100% recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to stress and dry skin this season. Step out feeling softer, calmer and more confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Anti-Stress Body Wash.
So then I asked them, I'd say they were like, what kind of patient is this? I asked them, would they mind repeating my mantra to me as I tried to stand up? And so I told them, of course, my recovery mantra was, I am, I can, I will. So they were saying, I was really nervous. It was a really hard moment, but this made it better. And then I put in my earphones and I put on Chris Martin, Viva La Vida. Nothing was going to stop me from standing up that day. But I have to say, there was a lot of fear in me as well, but I would not pay attention to it, Georgie. I knew the fear would grow if I was sweating at the thoughts of it, because even to turn around in my bed, I had loads of fractures on this side. It was excruciatingly painful. And that's with lots of pain relief. So anyway, the physios were like, I am, I can, I will. You can do it, Olivia. Come on. Up I stood anyway, only for about 2 or 3 seconds. It was really painful. But that was the start of my recovery. That was the start of it. And when I was in hospital with Eileen, Eugene's mother, when she was practicing walking on a walking frame, I called it the catwalk. And I used to be encouraging them all. I was like, come on now, you're on the catwalk. And it was so bizarre, because I remember then being on this walking frame and I was like, I'm on the bloody catwalk. I am on the catwalk now. Isn't that so strange?
It's so
strange. So it was a lot of when I do that, I could only put a certain amount of pressure, and I had to get used to all that each side. But we were really blessed. We live in a bungalow in Dunmore East. So, you know, that's part of the reason I was able to leave hospital as well, because, if you had stairs in your house, you'd have had to stay even longer. But after, there was lots of moments. I remember the first time I seen James again.
Tell me about that.
That moment, this is hard to describe, but it was I felt all my Christmases had come at once. I felt the luckiest person in the world. And there was this care assistant there, and she got me ready to bring me down in a wheelchair down to the front of the hospital where I would meet James for the first time since it happened. And I remember Eugene and him coming in. And I said to myself, I am the luckiest person alive. And James lifted Eugene up to me. Or sorry, James lifted Eugene. Eugene lifted James. and I didn't even care about the pain. I just grabbed onto him. And I said, thank you, God. And I smelled his hair. You know the smell of your child's hair. Oh my God. I felt I had won the lotto in that moment. That was all that mattered to me. Nothing else mattered to me in that moment. Only that I was here, that I was able to be a mommy again in some capacity to James. Now, look, I wasn't able to mind James on my own for months after that. You know, it was a very long recovery, but I gave it 100% every single day. I gave it 100%. And yeah, even I remember the first day I was able to stay with James on my own in the house, and it was just the two of us again. And I was like, oh, you know, it was very, very special. It was very special.
Wow. It's so moving, Olivia. And I know that you're such a deep thinker. First of all, I just wanted to say something that I've noticed about you just on the podcast for the first time, is the strength in your voice when you talk about James and when you talk about Derek. Tone changes. There's this strength. Obviously, we try to figure out everything and reasons. And I've never experienced an accident, and I know the trauma must be very different. It's its own unique thing, obviously, because it's so sudden and so confronting. But what have you figured out since then about the accident?
So for me, I really tried from the very beginning to focus on the meaning that I could give it, because I knew, you know, from all of my work that that is where my power lies. And I, you know, choose to believe that this happened. This was like a redirection or an initiation into an even more empowered life, a more vibrant life. And that's what trauma does to you. And I think, Georgie, you're just so grateful to be alive. You haven't time to be thinking in any other way at times. But for me, it has made me honour my life in a way I've never honoured it before. And, you know, like, yes, I was grateful for my life before. Of course I was. But now I'm even more grateful for my life. Mm-hmm. I am so grateful, Georgie, to be able to put my 2 feet on the floor in the morning, walk to my wardrobe to get my clothes. I'm so grateful to be able to go to the bathroom on my own and not have 3 care assistants in there helping me. I'm so grateful to be able to have a shower. I'm grateful to be able to lift James. I am grateful for all of these things. Like, our bodies are walking miracles. To walk, what has to happen? And I really seen that in hospital. For you to be able to walk, the amount that is happening in your body is unbelievable. So to be able to move with ease now, to be able to go to my classes down with Katie here in Dunmore East, I absolutely love it. Like, I love training. Like, I love being able to jump into the sea. Like, my consultant wouldn't let me into the sea for ages because he said, what if you fall? What if you fall and hit yourself off a rock? And I said, well, what if I don't? But, you know, he just wanted me to be really careful. But Georgie, like, one thing I would say to people is take a moment to think about the end of your life. Take a moment to do that, because what it will do for you is it will breathe new life, a new beautiful energy, new possibility and new potential into your life. I would always, always encourage people to do that, because we don't think about this. Like, that Friday morning, the truth of that is that I nearly lost my life. That would have been the end of my life. Like, it was really hard for me to get my head around that someday I mightn't be here. You know, I had lost so many other people, but this was my life. I was like, so I think there's been a real wake up to honour my life and to be grateful for my life. You know, I don't want to take away from how, you know, hard it has been as well. Like, and, you know, there's certain moments that have been very distressing, Georgie. Like, one thing, and I share this not to dwell like on the pain of it, but because I know a lot of people are in these situations after accidents. Like, accidents bring so many challenges into your life, and it's not something like I, you know, I'm able to talk about now, but it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff ongoing at the time. But what I will say is there was complete, say, silence after my accident. I think I got home and I waited for someone to knock on my door or call me. I waited for, you know, for the people that were involved. I realised that I had this expectation that they would be in touch and that there would be some type of nice ending to this horrible situation. Now, I have given myself the nice ending, but I really suffered and it added to my distress. And I almost felt embarrassed, Georgie, because people would ask me about the accident and ask me what happened and ask about the driver. And I had to be honest, I don't know. I've never heard from them. And what I realised and what I'd like to share with people if they're in that situation, if somebody doesn't acknowledge any of the pain that it, you know, the accident that they've been in has caused or honoured your life in the way that maybe you had expected. Just remember that you can honour your own life. And I have honoured my life in the way that feels right for me. And remember that you too can honour your life in the way that feels right for you. Now, I say this, Georgie, with the full of awareness that we are all human and that crazy things happen in our life. And I say this while also feeling huge compassion for that driver because, and like this has been, you know, it's like two feelings at once. And it took me a while to get my head around this, but I have huge compassion for the driver because I know that there was no way he would have, you know, ever thought something like that would have happened. And, you know, I have shared my story. He had his whole other story that morning from what had happened. So I share that with the best of intentions because I know it causes a lot of suffering for people. And also, like, how do I feel when I walk down, or I have never actually walked down from my house since it happened. And I know I will. I feel like I'm going to do that very soon. I have drove down. But how do I feel when I walk by the coffee shop now and see that nothing has changed, that no safety measures have been put in place? I feel really sad and I feel really, really hurt. There was an accident there at Christmas and thankfully no one was harmed. Like, what does it take for people to care about human life? That has been really, really difficult for me. It continues to be difficult when I see it, when I see kids running around or people queuing like I was that day. That's been very, very hard.
It's just, I think we've lost. It's like the world is so busy that sometimes we all just move on too quickly from things and we forget that there's someone still there, you know, that still needs to be honoured, like you said. How do you honour your own life? Because I think that's a really interesting point for people.
I think that I honour it by, first of all, like I've, as I said, like I have huge gratitude for my life, for all my blessings. I realise, you know, that I get to be a mother. That's a real gift. I honour that by being the best mother I can be, by like resourcing myself. That's that's one word that has just, I always say it to myself since this happened. I don't think I've ever resourced myself as much as I do now to be the best I can be. And do you know another thing it's given me? Like, I follow the call of my soul now, like never before. Like, I am following my dreams. I am living my life to the full. And I feel like me and Eugene have such a zest for life. You know, there's always, like, I do slag Eugene. I'm like, well, you, like, he's just gone to another level. Like, he's really living his life to the full, which I love. I am too. And even our, like, Dean experience, or going on different experiences as a family. There's a lot of soul care, I call it as well, Georgie. Like, I really care for my soul. I give my soul time to speak to me. I follow the call of my soul. And, you know, after an accident, and again, this is what I knew from Derek, not to make any big decisions, you know, for a year or two afterwards. So I'm at that, like, it's just over 2 years and I'm going making some like big changes in my life soon. And I know it's right for me with every fibre of my being. And I'm so excited about what the future holds. Like, and I'm also, I feel I've such a connection to the divine since this happened. So I like would live my life, like, you know, we talk about signs. I'm very receptive to signs. I really believe them. And I'm very open to them. I follow them. I listen to them. So I would say I'm following my dreams like never before because I know my time here is limited in this form. I don't believe, like, yes, our body dies, but our soul will continue to live. And I look forward to the day, like, where I see Derek again, my brother, Michael Desmond and Eugene, and lots of family that has passed on. But I know that they want me to live my life to the fullest before that time comes. So, you know, that's exactly what I'm doing.
We would think that an accident like that would strip us of our courage, would make us afraid. But it seems like it's given you even more courage to connect with who you really are. And it's empowered you to use your gifts, which you have in abundance.
Thank you.
Olivia, you are... This is one of the most amazing podcasts I've ever recorded. I feel
different after it, you know?
I know that you went through such a hard time, but you just radiate, you know, you radiate just something so unique and special. And I'm so honored to be in your circle and Eugene's, and tell us what Eugene is doing.
Yes. So it was really important for Eugene to give back to Critical and me too. But, you know, like, I wasn't ready in the immediate, like, months afterwards. So we decided that this is how we would do it. And so Eugene is running the Dublin City Marathon in October for Critical Charity. And thank you so much, like, to you and Jamie and everyone that has donated. But I will leave a little link if anyone would like to donate to Critical. So they, you know, Dr. Paul Campbell, the ease that he brought to my situation, the calmness he brought to me, made the world of difference in them moments. And he does that, Georgie. I cannot tell you the amount of times I hear his siren go up the road and I know he is going to, like, a cardiac arrest. Something, it could be something really awful. And I always bless myself, Georgie, and I say a prayer for Paul and I say a prayer for the people that he is going to meet, because I know that it's very, very serious, whatever is happening. So these, it's a voluntary organisation. It's important to note that. And Paul would have funded a lot of his, like, medical kit himself for years. Isn't that just amazing?
Unbelievable.
You know, like, even the pelvic belt he put around me, like, everything he did that day, that all comes from this charity. So, yeah, if anyone is looking to give back in some way in their lives, like, I'd really encourage people to think about donating to Critical Charity.
Okay, and I'll leave a link in the show notes. Even €5 would go such a long way if anyone's listening today. So I don't think I need to ask you what your mantra is, but...
No, well, I am, I can, I will, always got me through my recovery. And I loved, you sent me that the first day when I got home from hospital, like, that journey was so emotional, you know, passing by, like, the emergency department, like, the morgue, honestly, it was just... But when I got home, the first thing I opened was a package from you and it had that jumper, Actually I Can. And I really took that. I was like, well, I'd wear that when I would be doing my physio for months afterwards. Like, and it was just amazing. So that got me through my recovery. I have so many, like, mantras, like, all that is possible for me. I dwell in possibility. But I wrote down a few words to share with people, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. This is for the Soul Sisters. I encourage you to ask yourself today, what will you choose for your future? What path will you walk? If you were truly to love yourself, what would you do? Life is a series of choices, moments that shape the very essence of who we are. Every single day, we are gifted the incredible power to choose. When we face hardships, we have a choice. Choose love, and let it be the guiding force in your life. Choose forgiveness, for it frees your heart and soul. choose joy because we all need more joy in our lives. Choose to back yourself, even when the path seems unclear. For you are your greatest ally. Choose to rise even in the face of adversity because you are stronger than you know. Trust in yourself and your limitless potential and in the divine timing of your journey. Surrender to the flow of life, knowing that each step is leading you exactly where you are meant to be. Give yourself permission to be free, free from fear, free from doubt. Protect your energy and channel it towards your highest good. Use your time to create the life of your dreams, whatever that looks like for you. Now is the time. Trust that you are worthy of all the greatness life has to offer. Don't just exist. Live fully and unapologetically in the love that you are. You are the only one that stands in your way. It is all up to you. Choose to live a life that when you take your final breath, you look back on it with pride, knowing that you have lived it authentically, with passion and with purpose.
So beautiful. Olivia, thank you so much for everything.
It's been an absolute honour. Thank you, Georgie.
A huge thank you to Olivia for such a moving conversation, one that will stay with me for many years to come. She is a true soul sister, a big sister to me in so many ways. And I hope that we will be friends for a very long time. I've left her Instagram bio in the show notes. Please make sure to send her a message today. And I've also left Eugene's fundraising page. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'll see you next week. Yes, that is Christmas music. You can hear our Christmas show Jingle All The Way has gone to low availability. It's taking place on December 6th at the National Concert Hall. Christmas has always been such a special time of the year for me. I'm so happy to kick off the festive season with a night filled with connection, music, laughter and joy. So join us this Christmas for one unforgettable night. I'll see you then.